Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Al's brother later in the hour, Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider here in a moment. Tons of news in baseball. The Jays signing Kevin Gausman yesterday, 5 years, $110 million. Robbie Ray takes a 5-year deal at $115 up in Seattle. So thanks for the tight pants. Thanks for the Cy Young. See you later if you're in Toronto. He's heading to the AL West. Corey Seager signed 10 years, $325 million today with the Rangers. That's like 24 hours after Marcus Semien signed 7 years at $175 million.
So there's $500 million. Saying you wanted to go to a contender. Whatever. That team is terrible.
Yeah, Texas has been absolutely horrendous for years. We're talking 4 or 5 years. They've been terrible. And Semien wanted the top dollar. It's very simple. Like, he went to Boris, I believe, for a reason. And it's simple. Get me the most money, most term. And clearly he doesn't care about playing short because they just signed Seager, and Seager's playing short.
And he's going to just be on an irrelevant team and make a boatload of money for the next 7 years. So if that's what you want, go ahead. But you're going to be on a terrible team.
He played his cards beautifully, though. He took the one-year deal on a very good team in Toronto, 45 home runs, third in AL MVP, and he got paid. And, he may not be relevant ever again in his career in terms of wins and losses, because Texas has one of the worst rotations, one of the worst bullpens, bad depth in baseball. But he took the money, and good for him. I don't think you can say the same thing about Robbie Ray, because it's not like he just made $200 million, $250. He got $115, right? Gausman got $110 in Toronto. Robbie Ray could have probably got the same deal he got in Seattle and Toronto, give or take. And I think the Leafs or the Jays said, listen, we're taking whoever's willing to sign our deal today, because we're not going to be left holding the bag here. Gausman jumped, took it. They said, see you later, to Robbie Ray. And I have no problem with that stance at all. In fact, I salute it.
We were talking to Simmons about that. How much do you think Robbie Ray overshot himself? Like, do you think he was thinking with his agent, we are going to just rinse everybody here and hit the absolute biggest home run, no pun intended, of all time? He had to have been thinking that.
Close to it, sure. You're coming off of Cy Young, right? He had a great year. Pitching's always coveted, and yet I think after Gausman signed, it would appear to me as if he called his agent up and said, what the hell are you doing? We better get something here. Give me a 5-year deal. Give me some options, which he got. He gets an option after 3 in Seattle, and he got $115. That's a ton of money, man. He had to quote unquote take $8 million from the Jays this year. So he made himself some pretty good bank as well.
Yeah, he did.
Good for him. But like, you're right. Like, the guy's coming off the Cy Young. He deserved a big raise. He deserved to have multiple offers.
Yep.
They may have just maybe misunderstood the market or the marketplace for him.
It happens.
Isn't that weird? He wins the Cy Young, and there's probably people going, that's a one-off. You know, like there might have been
Who's leading
going,
the...
you know.
I think it is, though, Noodles.
I think that's what you were.
I think that's reasonable.
Did.
Yeah, like, right? I don't think he's DeGrom. He's not Scherzer. He's not going to be a horse every year.
Who's leading the wall squat and deuce on Toronto? Is it Semien? Is it Ray? Is it Kawhi?
Well, I don't know, man. I'm not sure you can apply any of that to any of those guys. Kawhi won a title here, so it sucked that he left immediately, and it became abundantly clear this was a one-off and he was always going to leave. Even a championship didn't change his mind. But Semien and Ray offered up 91 wins, a Cy Young, third in MVP votes, 45 home runs. You know, that's baseball. And again, it would be very depressing here the Jays didn't sign Kevin Gausman, but they did. You know, it's not as if the Jays are all, no one will go there, no one will pay, no one will. Barrios just signed a long-term deal. Gausman just signed a deal. They're going to be still active. I'll bet you they get a big bat at some point, either to play second or third base. And I don't think they're done. And I think the league understands the Jays are willing to spend, and they're here to win. And they're here to win now. That's a good scene. That's a good sign if you're a Blue Jay fan. So the Jays are in a good spot. The Leafs are in a great spot. They've won 14 of 16. Cannot say that about a few other teams in the league, especially Canadian teams. Montreal cleaning house in the front office. Vancouver losing again over the weekend. They lost in Boston yesterday. They're such a disaster. It's scary what's going on. Like, they're
big guys can't. Like, they're not getting
Pettersson
it done.
Pettersson is useless. Absolutely
Dude,
useless.
I feel right bad. Now. Like, I feel bad. I thought I mean, I was watching the game, and, like, they're in 6 and 5 situation, I don't even know if Greeny had him on the ice. I don't know if Travis had him on the ice. Couldn't trust him.
I don't know what happened to him, Noodles. I've been his. I had the Pedersen pom-poms, and I watched a couple shifts in Columbus, and I thought to myself, I honestly asked myself the question, are you even trying? Like, are you
his back check on Domi's empty net?
It was embarrassing. I'm glad you noticed that. That was embarrassing.
That was so bad. He didn't even try. You got to take a penalty there if need be.
Dude, you chop him, you do something. He just was like, ah, I guess that guy's scoring a goal. That's when I said, forget it with this guy.
It was awful.
I mean, he's a young kid. I want to chalk it up for the sake of Vancouver fans that, you know, he's having a bad year and it's going through the process. They give him, you know, a bridge deal on some good money. And I think, you know, if you look at his first couple years, he was on the trajectory to be a real special player. Hasn't worked out. He had an injury last year and has hit the ground face down this season. Mm-hmm. Canucks have needed him. I actually was looking at Hughes's numbers and stuff. You can't lump Quinn Hughes in with the rest of that group because he's actually played pretty well. It's the rest of the group, the goaltender, Besser, you know, Horvat, all of them, other than JT Miller, who shows some balls every night. Everyone else, is, and that Garland. The Garland's been pretty decent.
He's been pretty good, yeah.
They haven't even scratched the surface.
No, they're in a bad spot.
They haven't been good enough.
Vancouver's in a really bad spot. Ottawa's in a bad spot. Montreal's in a bad spot. Here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnston. Are you surprised by the way the dominoes have fallen here, where Montreal got out in front of it? They were in a cup final 4 or 5 months ago, CJ, and they decide, we're done. Bergevin's gone. Front office is gone. Meanwhile, Vancouver just keeps plugging along. I guess you could claim Ottawa did something. They put Matt Murray on waivers. So, really, it's Vancouver. Of the three disasters in the country right now, Vancouver's the only one that hasn't done anything.
Yeah, I would say if there's a surprise, it's that the Canucks haven't, you know, reacted in some way, tried to address their situation, you know, make that kind of firing or what have you. I mean, yeah, we can look at Montreal in the sense that they played 23 games from, you know, the night the cup was handed out in Tampa till, you know, today where they're replacing management. But, you know, it's been pretty clear, I think, from the early stages of this regular season that, you know, the most recent attempt to sign Mark Bergevin to a contract extension fell flat. You know, he was in a lame duck position. I think he wanted to move on, basically. If they couldn't get a deal done that he liked, I think he was open to a fresh start. And so, you know, it took a little bit of time for that to unfold and kind of happen dramatically over the weekend. But, you know, I think that was sort of a long time coming, meaning these last 6 weeks, you know, it was pretty clear to me that he wasn't going to be their GM at the end of the season, even though he was at the start.
CJ, of the three tire fires that are going on right now, which one do you think can flip the switch and kind of turn something in, and a year and a half from now we're looking back, say, what a job to turn that thing around?
It's a great question. Oh, man, I don't expect that heat from you.
Yeah, that's a dipping sauce type of question right there.
I know, I'm not even being a smart ass. That's actually a great question. You know, I think probably Montreal. You know, I'm not saying with a ton of conviction. Obviously, they lost, what, 8 or 9 players from the team that was in the cup final. You know, it doesn't look very good today. But I just feel that Vancouver has – I think that there's just deeper issues there. You know, I like individual players, of course. It's not like this is a team with, you know – they're not like where Arizona is right now, where obviously they're losing. They're kind of losing on purpose. They have guys at the very end of their career. They just don't have a lot of jam. They don't have a lot of.
Let's just say Arizona has tough roster construction. CJ Carey.
Yes, I know. I don't. I'm not going to use that word this week, Jeff. I'm trying to stay on your good side.
Okay.
But I'll say this: that I think that Vancouver has good players, but it feels like it's really a faulty foundation for the organization. So I think it's a longer than a year and a half fix. Whereas I do believe Montreal, with the number of draft picks they've already made, with the picks they still have coming, like I think that Mark Bergevin's actually left them in a decent spot for a departing GM. You know, often it's the guy who's traded away every single pick for the last 10 years trying to win a cup, and whoever comes in is literally taking over scorched earth. I don't think that the Canadians are in that position. And so if I'm going to pick one of the three, I think the Canadians are in the best spot to rebound. Not for this year, but by next season, if they're competitive, it wouldn't actually surprise me.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say Ottawa, Vancouver, Montreal, their seasons are done. They're, none of them are making the playoffs at this point. But I do think Bergevin, you've got to continue to bring up, you got to add context to where the team is at. It's the worst start in franchise history, but Carey Price hasn't started a game. Shea Weber retired. Philippe Deneau took a big contract and left. Like, that's basically your number one center, number one defenseman, number one goalie. That's a big hit to your foundation. And everything has gone awry. But what do you see in Bergevin's future? Like, did he do enough in Montreal? He was there for a long time. Do you see him landing elsewhere as a GM? Does he ease in? Is he a lieutenant somewhere? Where does the future of Marc Bergevin go from here?
I would expect he'll be a GM, and that will be his next job. I mean, look, obviously he's paid through the end of the season. You know, I wouldn't think it'll happen in year, although this is a strange year in the NHL, right? We have interim GMs right now in Chicago and Anaheim. You know, San Jose, Doug Wilson steps aside due to some health issues he's had. I mean, there's a little bit more, I guess, uncertainty in front offices around the league than we might typically find as we get to the start of December. And so maybe some circumstances unfold that Marc Bergevin finds a job quickly. But even if it isn't in these next 4 months, you know, I would think by next summer, he'll be in the mix. And I understand, you know, the criticism that might come with the job he did with the Canadiens. But, you know, I also look at someone who did a very good job trading. You know, you can look back over a number of his individual moves and see where he had a lot of success there. I think he's someone who's really got a good rapport with the other GMs and does a good job of getting what he wants there. You know, he was part of the front office that took the Canadiens to the Eastern Conference Final, you know, last year's Stanley Cup Final. You know, and I know that there was other interest in him even while he was in Montreal. You know, I think Pittsburgh a year or two ago would have liked to hire him if there was an opportunity to, you know, lure him away. And so, you know, it's tough to emerge from a Canadian market unscathed because there's just so much debate around the team and scrutiny on every little thing that happens. But, you know, I do certainly expect that Marc Bergevin will be a GM somewhere else and probably by the start of next year.
CJ, what do you think, or what's your gut instinct on the Olympics? I mean, you know, you're starting to hear some rumblings. Everyone's talked about it, and I know LeBron has tweeted about it, saying, well, if they choose to go, there's been some players saying they're concerned that if there's COVID issues over there, that they might be stuck there for weeks. Are you hearing any further on that, or do you think it's just all systems a go and guys are going to go 100%?
No, the hard part for me, Noodles, is that, honestly, there's a lot of people that I talk to that are saying they're skeptical it's going to happen. And, you know, I'm talking agents, I'm talking team people, league people, even union people. Like it, that sentiment is out there. And you know, part of my job, of course, is talking to people and trying to make sense of it because, you know, everyone has their own view and talks to their own circle. And, you know, there's not one voice of God that says this is exactly how it's going to play out. And so I'm trying to decipher, is that skepticism because we're all living in this time where, you know, obviously the pandemic's still impacting our lives and it's hard to be optimistic. Like, is everyone just feeling that, or is there smoke there? And I actually don't have a strong answer one way or the other. I mean, we've seen the Islanders have a couple games rescheduled here. Obviously Ottawa had three a week or so ago. You know, but my understanding all along is that the biggest concern would be is if a whole bunch of teams or enough games got impacted that it was going to make it impossible to finish the regular season schedule by the end of April. And they might need to reclaim some of that Olympic break to get the year in. And so, you know, unless that changes, we're at less than 10 games, way less than 10 games that have been even rescheduled already this season. And so, you know, I'm trying to see it optimistically, but definitely if you've heard the pessimism, I'm sure you talk to the same type of people I do. I mean, right, it's out there. There's a lot of people that feel like this isn't going to happen, but I don't yet see the circumstances in place. You know, there's not enough teams being shut down to make me think that it's truly in peril. You know, that being said, it's not even December 1st. They have till January 10th. You know, we could have 10 teams shut down between now and January 10th, and it might be very obvious by the time they get to that opt-out deadline. But as we sit here today, I think that everyone's just a little bit cautiously thinking, can they get through this? You know, we're seeing players added to the daily to COVID protocol lists around the league. And, you know, I guess you don't want to get too excited, but I still feel like this isn't, you know, in the past, like Pyeongchang, it was pretty clear the NHL owners really didn't want to go. Like, it just, I don't think it's quite the same dynamic that's been at play. Like, the players really want to be there, the top players in the league. that was a big part of getting the extension they did get done in June and July 2020 was that the top players wanted the chance to go to the Olympics, and that's why they made some other concessions and made the deal they did. And I think the owners in the league, while not liking it, understand that this is like a real, this is a real issue. This isn't just the few guys that speak in front of microphones and say, hey, we want to go to the Olympics. It's the best players in the entire league, almost to a person, really want to go, even if it means giving up a whole bunch of freedoms and their families can't come and all the other things because of Beijing and the world we live in. And so I really believe they're going to do everything they can to get there, but there's a healthy amount of skepticism right now. I know that part for sure.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider, I'm sure Alex Ovechkin leading the charge for Russian players wanting to get there, knowing his history and how much passion he has for playing for his country. And man, what a story this guy is. Not that it should be a surprise, considering he's one of the great players of all time and arguably already the greatest goal scorer of all time. But I think he's the heart winner if it were to be handed out tonight, which is shocking considering it felt like it was just a monopoly in Alberta, right? Like it was either Draisaitl or McDavid, and that was it. And maybe that changes. There's still a lot of runway here. But what amazes me, maybe more than anything, including the statistics, where you look at, I think he's got 7 goals in his last 5 games. Washington is 9-1-1 in their last 11. This guy is averaging 21 minutes and 40 seconds a game throughout the season. The last 4 games, all wins, he scored in 3 of them. 24 minutes, 21 minutes, 22.5, 23.5. Like, this guy just goes over the boards all night. He never stops. The energy never dies. All he does is hit guys and score goals. How do you put this into perspective, what Alex Ovechkin is doing at the age of 36?
In the modern era, there's not a lot of perspective, I don't think, to be found, honestly. You know, 36 is young in human years, but it's ancient in the NHL. I mean, he's like the 20th oldest forward in the league. Like basically every other team doesn't have a forward that old. You know, not every team in the league does, and he's still producing like this. It makes no sense, really. And, you know, I remember everyone was talking about the Gretzky record for him going back 5 years, and I was thinking, like, yeah, of course, he's on a great pace, but you're banking on years 32, 33, 34, 30, you know, all these things that he's going to score 40 to 50 goals every year, and that's preposterous, even as great as he's been. And yet, look where he is. I mean, he's already at 20. He's on his way to 20 here in the next couple of days. So, you know, I don't know that we have much of a barometer. I guess, you know, Jágr had, the one really solid season in Florida, like 60-odd points in his early 40s. You know, we've seen Joe Thornton play pretty late in his career and still have some, you know, in late 30s have some productive seasons. But there's just not a lot of that in the NHL anymore. There's very few guys that can barely hang on the lineup at 40, and we're talking about someone who's 36.
Could this change the Ovi-Sid debate? Like, if anyone's made up their mind.
I think it could.
You think it could?
He could win the Rocket this year, right? It would be his 10th year in his career winning the Rocket Richard Trophy. I mean, he could win the Hart Trophy. It's insane. Like, you know, obviously, I think that Sid was better in his prime. But, you know, if you have this kind of longevity and if you're still one of the most offensive and productive players in your late 30s, I mean, it's a different debate. It's a different way of looking at it. And you know, let's not rule Crosby out yet. He's barely played this year. He had COVID and he was injured with his wrist at the start of the season. And so there's still time for him to have some great seasons. You know, I'm not ruling him out or saying it's decided, but I think this changes the scope of it entirely because, you know, he's not just compiling, you know, more goals and points at this. Like he's leading a team that's probably performing a little bit above its weight class, especially with the injuries they've had. So, you know, the debate won't end until both those guys are retired or until one of them's retired anyway. And I think this shifts it way more to his camp than I ever would have thought, say, in 2017, you know, when Crosby won the third cup and won the second Conn Smythe and everything we'd seen at the World Cup and the Olympics and blah, 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 blah. It looked like the debate was over. You know, the fact that Ovechkin's adding significant chapters at this stage, I mean, that changes it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the debate is back on at a minimum. You know, I think you bring up a good point. When Sid won back-to-back cups, and at that point Ovi had not won his cup yet, you're like, they can't compete. The hardware can't compete. Now Ovechkin's got a cup. He got his Conn Smythe. And now, like, if he can sneak in another Hart or certainly another Rocket or two and then pass Gretzky at some point while he's still playing, You know, I don't know what Sid's going to do the rest of his career. I don't know if Pittsburgh's going to be competitive. I don't know if he's going to be up for the Hart again. It's certainly alive at a minimum.
Well, here's the question. Will Sid play somewhere else? Like, this gnaws at me. Because if he's willing to go and play somewhere else, and I don't know that he is, I mean, it could change it. Like, he could, you know, in a year or two, if Pittsburgh really does a rebuild, which everything lines up for them to probably do, unless legacy's important.
Is that because of the new ownership, you say that? Like, the new ownership would push for
it? I say it because of the new ownership, but I also say, look, we have Malkin, Letang, Brian Rust, just off the top of my head, they have like seven or eight guys this year that are, their contracts are up. And let's face it, I know they're hanging in the playoff race, but it's pretty clear what's going on. They're the team that's traded away every first round pick for the last 10 years trying to win the cups. I could see organizationally with new ownership and those players all needing new deals. And it would be a good time to turn a page.
Scary talk though, Chris. We've talked about Pittsburgh, what they were before Sid got there. And that was a disaster. Like, nobody in the building, nobody excited about it. So that's a scary place to think about, post-Sid, Geno, all that stuff.
Well, and new owners, too. Like, literally, new owners.
Yeah.
And they've been spoiled. I mean, because there's lots of rebuilds where you get first and second overall picks, and you don't end up with, you know, a version of even Marc-Andre Fleury, let alone Malkin, Crosby, you know, Yager, Lemieux. I mean, they've had so many of the best players in the league for the last 30 years. I mean, it's hard to imagine they're going to that run of luck will continue if they do rebuild.
No kidding. Well, we'll see. It's a fun time in the NHL, man. There's so much news going on, and we'll continue to see where it goes. We'll do it again early next week. Thank you, CJ.
All right, boys. Talk then.
There's Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, that'll be an interesting moment if it gets to that where management approaches Sid, I would think, with the idea of moving on. Would he entertain it? Is he willing to do it? I guess, you know, we won't have that answer for quite some time. It's not going to happen between now and the trade deadline. But with all this turnover and all these guys kind of moving around and they don't have a lot in the system because they have been trading away and going for it year in, year out.
As soon as it's brought to your attention, I can't speak for Sid. As soon as it was brought to mind, I mentally checked out. I'm like, these guys don't want me. I just have to be somewhere else because I just can't. I can't stand the idea of me practicing here and people looking at me knowing that they want me somewhere else. I couldn't do it. It was
so delicate, though, with a guy like that, right? Like with Sidney Crosby, I don't know. I don't picture Brian Burke doing that. What we know of Brian Burke, I don't picture him having that conversation with Crosby. So, you know, maybe it's a game of chicken and you wait for Sid to be the one to say, hey, listen, if this is where it's going, this is what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to go to these three teams or this one team, make it work for me. Because that's another thing, the trade featuring, and we're speaking in hypothetics here.
But Hayes, isn't
that's not one where he gets traded to Arizona.
No, here's the thing, though, guys. He might be Ryan Getzlaf. He might say, I want to stay and help these young, you know, the new. Geno's on an Geno's on an expiring contract. This team might just look, to CJ's point, this team might just look differently through osmosis because of all the expiring contracts. So they might
when
just
Sid's
go,
deal up, Jamie?
Well, he's got three more years, but Geno's done. Geno's done at the end of this season. And to CJ's point, Brian Rust is, who's a big part of their team. You know, Chris Letang is an unrestricted free agent. So there's some guys, and I'm not even talking about Dominic Simone or Brian Boyle, Evan Rodriguez, Zach Aston-Reese. I'm looking, all of those guys are UFAs at the end of this year. Jeff Carter. So all that money comes off the books. It's Jake Guentzel and Sidney Crosby. Guentzel's got another year on his deal. Another two, and Sid has another three after this year. So you're really, Kasperi Kapanen will be an RFA. Like, they don't have that. Like, they'll have turnover through osmosis. Like, it may not be going to Sid. He might go, hey, I don't want to be part of a rebuild. That's a different conversation. But, you know, if they decide to not sign Geno at the end of this season, then the change is on. Or Letang,
that would be my 100% guess from Sid. He does not want to be a part of a rebuild. Who wants to end a legacy career in a rebuild? No one.
No, he's
let
never
me go tag
really
along with
it.
McKinnon in Colorado for a couple of years. I'm not doing a rebuild.
That's the question, is because you know he would dictate where he's going and how it's going to be handled. if it got to that point. And that's that's what I'm saying. It's not like Arizona is going to put the package together and they're going to ship him there. You know, like he would pick two or three teams and maybe even just one team and say, if you can work a deal out with this team, I'm willing to go there. And who knows what that team might be.
And luckily, he does have a favorable contract, 8.7 in today's game. Man.
He's worth every penny still, too. Oh, like he's so easy, off to a slow start because of COVID and the surgery. He's look at his numbers last year, the year before. He's still a rock star in this league. He's still a great player. The marketing, you know, imagine bringing Sid into your market, wherever that happens to be.
Yeah.
So we'll see because the new ownership, that became official today. Fenway has bought in majority stake of the Pittsburgh Penguins. So what that means for them, I guess, you know, we'll find out down the road. All right, Al's brother coming in. He has the hat, I hope. I don't know that. I cannot confirm it tonight. I hope someone's got that hat on. Team Al Dog is 1-2 yesterday and moving in the right direction. So we'll get his take on the game tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
I have to live with it.
TSN 2.
The following is the first star, Al's brother.
Monday Night Pick is back and brought to you by BookSeats.com. Jump on Instagram and visit at BookSeats.com to enter the Las Vegas Sports Package giveaway. BookSeats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. There he is. What a hat. Both of them. Glorious looking hats. See, you can't keep these guys apart, Noodles. They're made for each other.
Well, I wonder if the problem is because we've never actually worn them together on the same day. Maybe that's the problem.
Dude, we got other problems other than the hats. Do you understand that?
No, I think it's just the hats. It's just the hat thing, I'm telling you.
You take you a douche. You don't sit there and look at it. You flush it and move on. We're going to flush it and move on.
Yeah, yes. Jalen Hurts, man. That is honestly the story of your life, the two of you. Like, that's your soundtrack is Jalen Hurts. And the coin flip, what happened, Al's brother? You were convinced the Browns were going to cover. The coin flip confirm that for you. So
here's what I think happened. I think I read the coin wrong. I believe since we coined it the shark coin, whatever it landed on, I think we're supposed to go opposite because that team that it landed on was going to shart all over the place. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's actually very smart.
So I think going forward, you have to go against the coin. So, you know, it's a learned experience. And next time, maybe we'll have to factor that in.
Well, you guys, I mean, next week, what a couple of games you're going to have. You're going to have the Cowboys and Saints. That's the Thursday nighter. Good luck with that. And the Monday nighter is New England at Buffalo. That is going to be Team Al Dog's pick. And you can't use the coin for that. That could be the biggest game of the year. Are you going to go to the coin?
How early do the spread comes out?
It's already out. The Bills are favored by three.
Yeah.
I'll take New England on that all day long as of right now.
Okay.
I don't want to give away any tips.
I think that's a good pick.
Yep. Road dog.
That's a very good pick. All right. Well, as for the game tonight, the Seahawks, the money's coming in on Seattle. This opened as a pick'em, I believe. Seattle's now a 2-point favorite, Al's brother. It is my pick, so you don't have to give out all of your knowledge, but can you figure out why this money's moving around? What's going on here?
Well, I think if you just take a look at these two teams and you just, you know, Russell Wilson's now a couple of weeks removed from that injury. Perhaps now he can start getting after it and start becoming the quarterback that we all know he is. So I just think that people think eventually Seattle's just going to come out of this funk and Russell Wilson's going to come out of the funk. And he usually plays pretty good in prime time. So that's what I'm thinking that might be the play here.
His numbers have been bad, though.
They have been so bad. But, I mean, that finger, I don't know. It's a weird one. The fact that this went up to Seattle -2 does make it a little interesting.
I think it makes it very interesting. My boy Heinicke, I think this guy is the real deal. I think he's a gamer on Monday night under the lights. What? Washington football team has been very disappointed.
Your guy Heinicke, like he's a nobody.
I like Heinicke, man.
XFL he's got the star.
The bandana going. Exactly. He was an XFL player. Forget the Arena League or the Canadian.
Exactly.
Football League.
You don't know anything about. He's not your guy.
He's my backup too.
Yeah, he's my guy. And
Hayes
and you know
is
what?
Messing with you.
I'm going to take the points here, man. I don't get it. I don't see Seattle. You're giving me points at home against Seattle. I understand Russell Wilson, the lore of Russ. I understand his history and who he is. A great player, first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's still injured. I think he's been awful. I don't think that offensive line is any good. I think Pete Carroll's got that team in a really bad place. They're losing a ton of ball games. I think they're looking at the rest of the division, including Arizona, who might be the best team in the NFC, and the Niners, who have now come alive. They're not playing for anything. Seattle's done. They're out. They're not going to come back. They're not going to get into the race. You give me points at home against Seattle, I'll take it. I'm on the football team tonight. On the football team. Lock it in, Al's brother, with your fancy hat. How do you guys feel about being on Seattle tonight?
I couldn't be happier. I think it's a ridiculous pick by you. Seattle is that team that is out of it, but can jump up and bite you in the ass and put on a performance.
You think so?
I don't think anyone's out of it this year. Like, you look at air, it's such a clogged up. When you look at the wild card race, it's so clogged. I don't think they're out of it, especially with that. There's an extra game this year. Like, there's an extra game that they could come in and totally get it done, but they got to win tonight, because I think if they lose tonight, then they probably are out of it at
three and seven right now, Els.
So they fall to 3-8, they could be out of it, but they go to 4-7.
They could be.
What are you talking about? Like, they are not making the playoffs, Els brother.
It's like, must win.
Of course it is, but the same argument applies for the team on the opposite side of the ball. They're 4-6.
They stink, though.
Yeah, Seattle sucks. Seattle's not a good football team.
Russell Wilson, though, tonight, I think Russell Wilson finally gets back to the guy that he is. And you take a look at Seattle, I think they do. I mean, they're 4-1 against the spread in the last five Monday Night Football games. So when you look at Russ Wilson, you look at this team. The Monday Nighters.
This is what he comes up with.
Tremendous information.
It's the best. It's the shirt money. It's just a steady flow.
But
the
his
pipes
point,
are broken.
Give them that
point.
extra day of practice to prepare. They usually come out and they get it done.
I know, but here's my issue. Every time we have a game, it's like this team, the last 12 Monday Night Footballs, they've got their ass kicked. But then when it's our time to shine, it's like they turn it around.
That's the whole point of a trend. That's the thing. What? At some point, the trends come to an end. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason there's been one undefeated team in the history of the NFL.
That's what we are. We are trend stoppers.
Yeah, that's
trend
right.
Trend stoppers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. You're the end of the road on a positive trend.
Thanks. I know that.
Yeah. The Niagara Falls of positive trends.
The hats. Well, the hats are going to do it. Like I said, this is I actually would prefer Al's brother's argument, where he's like, you know what? We've never worn the hats together, so now we're going to win.
Look at us.
Is there anything more desperate?
We lose every week, and we have team hats.
Speaking of desperate, Al's brother sent the most desperate text in the history of gambling chains.
Oh, boy, which one?
This on Thursday, when you were calling for a pick six and a two-point conversion.
I needed it.
That was disgusting.
I just don't see it happening.
This is what we receive, Noodles. This guy's like, I just need a pick six and a two-point conversion. As if that would ever happen.
Yeah.
Like, even if they got a pick
just go
six,
for it.
They're not going for two to cover the spread.
Well, you know what? Also, it stayed alive, too, because the game went to overtime. If they would have kicked the field goal and then got a pick six, that also would have allowed it to cover.
But clearly
none of that happened, and they lost the game.
What are you gonna, it's always, that's what it is, Noodles. It's just, you know, these two are dancing around this magical world of what if and hypotheticals and tremendous information.
I love it.
You've got more. I can see you looking at the sheet. Go ahead.
Well, you take a look at the just 61% of the sharp money's on Seattle, and you know that based on how this line has shifted from the pick'em to Seattle. So a lot of the smart people are saying Seattle's going to come in and they're going to get this victory. And you look at the Washington football team, you talk about trends, but they're 1-4 against the spread in their last five home games. So they don't play too well at home. That's exactly where they are tonight. Really, really like that we are on Russ Wilson. The Renaissance is coming. Team Al Dog is happy to be rolling with the Hawks tonight.
All right. You know what this is? This is a brutal football team with a high NFL pick, and they're both wearing their hats. Al's brother is like a highly touted lineman out of Oregon, and, you know, the O-Dog's the GM, and they're both wearing the hats, and they work for the Lions, or they work for the Jets, and, you know, they're winning the offseason. But when it's time to actually play, then everything starts to go south.
Biting kneecaps off.
And Jerry Goff and Baker Mayfield.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Two first overall picks with great hats. Great hats. All right. Well, there you have it. I made the pick. You know, I've got to live with it. We'll see what happens tonight with Washington. I don't love this game, personally. I do think it's, you know, I think the line is appropriate based on Seattle's history and based on Russell Wilson up against Heinicke.
I think there's an Overdrive fan out there that literally bets against Al Dogg every time.
Oh, he's living on the bridle path now. He's Drake's neighbor. Drake's neighbor.
He writes to us all the time. He's like, "Yeah, I made $1,600 last weekend because of, you know, betting against."
Can you imagine if Drake got a knock on the door and it's his new neighbor and the guy said, "The reason I live here now is I've been fading Al's brother's picks," and I just wanted
to mention that's the case.
$30 million mansion.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll take a piece of that.
Of course, you should.
I should get a little bit of the action there.
Well, Al's brother, I wish you nothing but success. The Monday Night NFL Pick is brought to you by BookSeats.com. Jump on Instagram. Visit @BookSeats.com on Instagram to enter the Las Vegas Sports Package giveaway, the best sports package giveaway in the business. BookSeats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. How about your boy Tiger Woods speaking with Golf Digest today? You see that? And Tiger saying that he's going to have to pick and choose where he plays, when he plays, do the old Ben Hogan routine, and essentially said his body's never going to get to a point where it's kind of depressing the script. Like, it basically said, you know, I'm happy with it. It's a reality. There's not much I can do. I plan on playing again. I hope to play again. I don't know if I can actually do anything on tour, but I'll show up. And
the one thing about that comment, Hayes, is it's going to be no different than how it's been for the last 10 or 15 years. This guy never went out there and was like grinding it out in Memphis or tournaments like that.
No.
He played Torrey Pines, Pebble Beach,
Bay Hill,
the Players, and then
Augusta. Or he went up to Jack's course. He'd be up at the Memorial, usually.
Yes, he would play the Memorial before the U.S. Open, and then the U.S. Open, British, and then it was like, I'm done for the year.
Yeah.
It's not like this guy's schedule was ever out of this world. So basically, his schedule won't change. It'll be even lighter than it is.
Yeah, I think you're talking the four majors.
And maybe mix in Arnie's tournament or the Players or a couple more. That's it. That's all he's going to do.
Yeah, that'll be it. And he won't qualify for the FedEx because he won't play enough.
No.
So he won't accumulate enough points. He won't be at East Lake. He won't, you know, the WGCs he probably won't play in. But, yeah. Exactly. He'll be down in, where is it? Are they in Bermuda, Barbados, wherever they are, the Hero Challenge? He'll be at that if he's healthy enough. It's his course. It's his tournament. I would guess he'll play Riviera, right? Like, that's kind of the genesis is his tournament if he's healthy enough in his hometown in L.A. And that'll be it. Yeah. That'll be it. Like, and that's fine. But I hope he's hedging his bets with, you know, he said, after his back fusion, he had to climb Mount Everest and he had to do it to prove he could do it again. Then he won the Masters. He said he's not capable of doing that anymore. Is that him hedging his bets where he's like, I might not be that good, trying to kind of keep expectations low? Because, you know, when he plays again, people are going to be freaking out, thinking Tiger's going to win the Masters, Tiger's going to do this, that, or
there's only one expectation when that guy says, I'm coming back and I'm playing. It's like, this guy is already, like, He could show up if Augusta started tomorrow and he showed up, he's the favorite. Like, he would be the favorite, the betting favorite.
Yeah, he should be.
In the top five, anyway.
But, yeah, well, the odds would be there because the
money
will
come in. But the expectation is him for just to win. Like, there's been no other golfer ever that just was on a tear like that where he just showed up and won. It was outrageous, man.
Well, I'm pulling for him. It'd be a great story, but it didn't – I don't know. Like, just – do you think he is coming back? Do you think
it's sooner or later, a doctor's got to say to this cat, you got to worry about walking now. Like, let alone, forget about the Masters, forget about golf. You got to, if you want to walk, like, there's one more surgery and you, like, he's got to be at that point, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He says in the article that at one point it was like 50-50 he was going to lose his leg. Now, he didn't. He'll recover from that. I don't believe that will revert into a position where that will be a concern for him because he had the surgeries, he's rehabbed and all that. But, you know, once you have knee surgeries, which he's had many, the next one's generally around the corner, let alone the back. I mean, I a buddy of mine is a surgeon, and he's told me, man, you have one major back operation, and that's a gamble the rest of your life. This guy's had four or five.
Yeah.
Like, he's done stuff with the spine, you know, so – yeah, I'll take it, man. If I can see him play 10 times a year for the next 5-6 years, I'll happily take it. And I'd love it. And every time you get to see him play will be fun. I'm not expecting him to win, personally. But I've been down that road before, and he found a way to do it. And all you need is look at Mickelson at Kiowa. Catch a heater for 4 days. He's more than capable of doing that.
And right? That's what he can do. He can do that two more times at a major. He could show up at a PGA or at Augusta and do it for 4 days.
Yeah.
But is he going to be playing enough, practicing enough? Because
who knows?
That's the key. It's like you got to be in some kind of form showing up there. Tiger Woods or not, you can't just wheel in there and be like, okay.
Well, especially look at the crop of players going right now, man. You're out there against,
no kidding.
You know, Koepka, DJ, and DeChambeau. Like, you know, look at Morikawa. Like that he's Morikawa's 23 or 24. Like, those guys aren't going to stop and step aside because Tiger's playing. Like, that's not going to happen. So it's going to be tough, but I guess he's speaking with the media tomorrow morning, so we'll have some audio tomorrow, some viz. We'll see what he says, you know, and what he can tell us about when he actually might play again. So that and more coming up. We'll get back into the Monday Nighter tonight, continue to look back on a pretty wild scene in the NHL, the NFL. The Raptors are off tonight, coming off another loss last night. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away, big pair of tickets, Leafs Tampa, Thursday, December 9th. And every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, I'm sensing a theme here week over week, from Le Grappleur. This Maple Leaf was born in Sweden. This Maple Leaf was born in Sweden.
It's Matt Sundin.
Well, it can't be William Nylander because he was born in Calgary. So,
correct.
Scratch
Andreas
him off
Johansson.
The Yeah, this could be anybody, I guess, right? I don't know. Who knows? Jyrki Lume. Was he Swedish?
Finnish.
Okay. Finnish, yeah.
Oh, what are you going to do? All right, this Maple Leaf was born in Sweden. And as we established earlier this afternoon, I mean, the Leafs are red hot right now, but I think it's – you want something to attach yourself to as a fan and get past the, well, what about the playoff stuff and what about the half series and all that, which I understand. I get it. I totally can adhere to that psychology and understand it. The chase for first place in the division is a big carrot, because I think the 2 and 3 seed are likely going to be a combination of Toronto, Florida, Tampa. And I don't think you want to grind through 82 and then be staring at Tampa. Like, if that's it, so be it. You know, and the Leafs, again, they've wasted all their bullets. This idea that, well, what do you want? They're playing Tampa. Like, it doesn't matter who they play, they got to win the series. Have to. But you want to make life easier on yourself, or at least put yourself in a bit of a better position, get home ice and play a wild card team as opposed to one of the two big boys down in Florida. That
Dude,
would be
I've
my
said
suggestion.
Said it a zillion times, Hayes. You just got to get in. Forget about where they place or where they are. Because, if you told the Tampa Bay Lightning, you have to get to the point where you're playing the Islanders in the semis and then Montreal in the finals. You just never know how things shake out, man. Mm-hmm. There's upsets. There's all kinds of bizarre stuff. You just get in there. You never know what the hell goes on.
It's well, true. That's very true. You can't predict it, but still. With all that said, I'm avoiding Tampa in the first round.
I agree. All of a sudden, you know, Point is back, and then, Kucherov, yeah, it's fine. He's back again, ready just for the playoffs, hasn't played a game.
Oh, there's no doubt that you avoid them like the plague. Like
if you can, right? Oh, yeah, like who would you rather play, Philly in the first round or Tampa, you know, or whoever it's going to be?
Take care of your own. That's all you need to do.
That's right.
Focus on that. And you know what? It's early on, but ultimately that's – control what you can control, and that's win the games you play. Don't worry about anybody else.
It's all you can do, and that's all they've been doing. You know, the Leafs have won 14 of 16, 7 in a row on the road. You know, I mentioned this stat off the top that they just had a 4-game road trip starting in Long Island and then the 3 in California, where they won all 4 games on the trip by at least 3 goals. The last team to do that was the 78-79 Canadiens. So, random stat, yes. Pretty interesting stat, yes. Flattering stat, absolutely, for the Leafs. You know, they went out to Cali and smacked those teams around, smacked the Islanders around. They're in a good spot. and they're back in action at home against Colorado on Monday. They got a tough week though at Mini on Saturday. Mini's been one of the teams of the the NHL early season here. Mini's
dynamite
been really
right
good,
now.
Really good dynamite. Yep. And at Winnipeg on Sunday. So tough week for them. The Raptors back in action tomorrow. We'll tee that up as well. And I'm sure there's going to be more baseball news, hockey news, football news. It should be a fun one. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
Hayes, your number 100, 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.